You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 361. And in this one, I chat with Dr. Patricia Zarita Ona. Patricia is director of the East Bay Behaviour Therapy Centre and author of several books, including Acceptance and Commitment Therapy for Borderline Personality Disorder. So in this episode, we talk about what is Borderline Personality Disorder, or BPD, and what does she mean by the term superfeelers, what it's like being a superfeeler, what is Acceptance and Commitment Therapy, or ACT, the six micro skills she teaches, emotional noise versus emotional awareness, OCD and superfeelers. She details some of the micro skills. We discuss attachment, compassion, being a superfeeler while doing exposure and response prevention therapy, and much more. And thank you to NoCD for supporting the podcast. NoCD offers effective and convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. To find out more about NoCD, their therapy plans, if they currently take your insurance, or to download their free app, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories, or the link will be in the episode description. So thank you to Patricia for her time on this one. I learned a lot and enjoyed the conversation. And thank you to you guys for listening. It means a lot, and I hope you have a good day. Welcome back to the show, Patricia.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always exciting to chat with you.
Yeah, it's good to have you back on. Today, we're going to talk about ACT for BPD, or Borderline Personality Disorder, or as sometimes you call it, superfeelers. So I guess maybe we start there. Like, are we going to be talking about BPD or this category of people you call superfeelers, or both? Or how do you want to explain that?
That's a great question. I think will be helpful for the audience to unpack and deconstruct what borderline personality disorder is. There are hundreds of books written about it, and a lot of literature has described people struggling with borderline personality disorder as being manipulative, liars, trying to get things their way, all types of very harsh judgments. The way that I think of borderline personality disorder is as a struggle of emotion regulation. And by emotion regulation, I mean that all of us, you and myself, we are constantly regulating our responses to our emotion. It just happens that some people, instead of having an emotional dial, they do have an emotional switch that goes on and off anytime. And then in those moments when the emotional switch is on, they feel too much, too soon, and they act too quick. And because of that, they have a more chronic pattern or a long-standing pattern of acting quickly on their emotions. So behind emotion regulation, there is that process of feeling too much, too quick, and too soon. And that's why I think of people dealing with BPD as being super feelers. And at the same time, I do think that emotion regulation, or regulating our responses to our emotions, is not exclusive of people with BPD, but it's a human capacity that we all have, and also human struggle, because no human being walks on earth without regulating their responses to their emotions.
Nice. Cool. So maybe we'll talk about it today in terms of, can we talk about it in terms of both BPD and people that maybe wouldn't hit the diagnostic criteria for BPD, but would kind of align with what you're saying, the super feelers?
Yeah. In fact, if you look at anxiety struggles, if you think about OCD or social anxiety, sometimes we do encounter people who have a particular phobia. They are dealing with obsessions, and they also have an emotional switch. They also experience a lot of affect. So I think, again, emotion regulation, it's a struggle that can be present across many presentations, even though people may not meet criteria for BPD. when people meet criteria for BPD, all what we are saying is that the emotion regulation powers have a chronic pattern and they have taken a life in their own. Their behaviors, they have been generalized to multiple settings, to multiple relationships, and they have been reinforced. So that will be the difference.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. That's useful. Thank you. So you started talking about it a bit there about, you know, they feel too much too quickly and then act too quickly. So, but I guess in a bit more detail, you know, how does the world affect them, like internally?
Yeah. I think one of the things that we know is that for people who are prone to be super feelers, when they can be walking on the street and they suddenly have this wave of emotion that demands that they do something, that they either sometimes criticize themselves or they have to act on anger or they have to isolate and they quickly act on that emotion. And then later on, they are sometimes regretting the actions they took. So to your question, I think it's helpful to clarify that when people experience intense emotions, they are going to act on the emotion by showing externalizing responses. Like they may scream, they may act out on the emotion, they may yell, or they're also going to act on the emotion by criticizing themselves, by judging themselves. They have more internalizing responses. In either case, what you have is a strong emotion that feels like the size of an elephant. It's bigger than you, and it's coming quickly with an urge for you to take action. And when you act on that emotion, you don't look at how your behaviors are impacting yourself or impacting others until later on. So there is also this slow return to the emotional baseline level. It's like because they're ruminating on the emotions sometimes, they are judging themselves. So it takes them a little bit longer to go back to their emotional baseline level.
Interesting. Yeah, that's good. And any idea, or at least from your clinical practice, you've observed why people become super feelers?
That's a great question. There are many theories that have explained why a person is prone to be a super feeler. What we know is there is a physiological predisposition. Also, people with history of trauma are going to experience emotional dysregulation problems. People that have been exposed to environments in which people will quickly act on the emotions also learn to do so. So I think there is a combination of physiological predisposition plus the environment in which a person grows. There is no one single cause. I think it's a combination of these factors that led a person to feel too much, too quick, and act too soon.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. So before we get into how being a super feeler may affect therapy and OCD, maybe a lot of people will be familiar with acceptance and commitment therapy that listen to this show, but just for those that haven't ever stumbled across it, you know, what is ACT?
That's my favorite question. The way that I think of ACT is a mindfulness-based behavioral therapy that is, as the name indicates, is blending acceptance-based processes and invite a person to identify what matters to them, what are their personal values, and invite us to take actions in the names of our values while learning to make room and learning skills to handle all the internal noise that comes under our skin, like uncomfortable thoughts, uncomfortable emotions, uncomfortable sensations. So ACT is a mindfulness-based and a behavioral approach that really shows us how to handle our pain in the service of being the person we want to be. And if you are going through if you are receiving ACT therapy or you're reading an ACT book, we are going to be teaching you six particular processes or six particular micro skills. Acceptance, which is making room for all internal struggles you experience. Diffusion, which is learning to know this, to have a space between yourself and your thoughts. Perspective taking, values, self as a context, and committed action. So those are the six processes that we're usually going to be teaching you in an ACT therapy to help you to identify what speaks to your heart and take action.
I like that. Good summary of ACT. So I guess what comes to my head now, or to my mind, is thinking about, obviously I want to talk about super feelers with OCD, but just separating that for a minute and just talking about super feelers and then people with OCD. So in therapy, we're often asking them to kind of, you know, ride the urge to not give into it. So the brain can learn that, or drop the compulsion. So the brain can learn that, oh, it's okay. And I guess it's similar in super feelers, of to a point they have to ride out those feelings where normally they would react and act based off of those feelings. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that is fair to say. I think when I think about the applications of ACT for super feelers, I am thinking about basically six particular micro skills that they can learn to relate to their emotions, to relate to their bodily sensations, to relate to their thoughts, and to relate to all types of struggles that they deal with. Those six micro skills are noticing the internal experience that they are struggling with, naming it for what it is without any judgment, checking the workability of their actions, if they act on the thought, if they act on the emotion, choosing a values-based behavior, and then choosing an inner skill to handle the internal noise. So, for example, if in this podcast you say something that is really upsetting to me, I may notice that my mind may have the thought, how is it possible he's asking me that question? And I may start noticing that my heart starts beating fast and there is this wave of anger that comes to me. I may say, I'm noticing the anger. Here comes cranky Patricia. I may also check, what is this emotion asking me to do? What is anger asking me to do right now? And maybe anger is asking me to prove a point I'm trying to make in the podcast, right? But then I have to step back a little bit and check, Patricia, is it helpful right now? Does it really help you to be who you want to be in this moment if you try to prove your point to a stool? The answer is going to be no. So then I will choose, okay, so what's the value here? What's really important to you, Patricia? And I may say, it's very important for me to be kind, to be gentle, and to be open to how the conversation goes. My value is to be open in this moment. So then instead of acting on this emotion of anger and trying to prove a point, I may choose to put my hand on my chest, take a deep breath, and I may look at you and ask you more about your opinion or what made you ask me a particular question. So basically, I know this may sound, I'm making it sound this a little bit simple. I know it's really, really hard work. But the thing within ACT, we're teaching super feelers these six particular micro skills: noticing, naming, checking the workability of actions, choosing a values-based response, and then choosing an inner skill to handle an internal noise. When you break down any struggle in micro skills, then we're helping to break a behavioral pattern. So I think that that's the way that I think about ACT, apply for super feelers. On the one hand, yes, we're teaching people to notice the wave of the emotion and to do some urge surfing if you want. But I also think that they need extra micro skills. For example, when we're thinking about emotional awareness, there is a huge distinction between a gut feeling and true wisdom or true emotional awareness. If you are prone to feel too much, too quick, or too soon, it's really hard when you are tapping into this gut feeling, because every emotion is going to feel, you know, extremely intense, overwhelming, and it's going to feel as if it's the truth. So in the work with super feelers, I do a lot of distinguishing what's emotional noise and what is emotional wisdom. Because imagine, again, if you are prone to feel a lot, every emotion is going to feel like your gut feeling. And we live at the time in which everyone says, trust your gut, trust your gut. If you're a super feeler, that's actually very challenging to do so, because you cannot distinguish, right? So that will be a micro skill, for example, distinguishing emotional noise for emotional awareness. Another micro skill in terms of dealing with emotions will be noticing some emotions that come and go, like throughout our day, we're experiencing different emotions. You may get a little bit anxious, you may get a little bit excited, you may get a little bit sad, but there are also other emotions that are much more overwhelming to us. Fears of loneliness, fears of abandonment, fears of not being good enough. So those emotions can be many times historical for super feelers, and they tend to get stuck much more on them than other emotions. So discriminating also that the emotions that come and go, like soft waves in the oceans, versus the ones that are actually really, really hard for me to handle is also very important as a micro skill. So that's in addition to noticing the wave of the emotions, right? I think super feelers require these micro skills to unpack more the internal experience.
Yeah, I like that. And I guess what came to my mind is, you know, when you talk about super feelers and trusting your, well, the difference between gut instinct and sort of true wisdom, you know, that's a common thing I've seen over the years with people with OCD. It's like people tell me to trust my gut, but my gut's like, you know, I'm really, really anxious. So my brain, obviously, it's not really the gut, it's their downstairs brain telling them they're in danger. And that's what the anxiety is. But it gets perceived and read as that's a gut instinct, you know. And in the case of, say, relationship OCD, my gut's telling me this isn't the right relationship for me. And it's like, is it the gut or is it just an overwhelming amount of emotion? So is it on that, like, and that micro skill, how do you work with like distinguishing between gut and true wisdom?
I'm trying to think how to answer that question in a way that it's helpful. So one of the things that I do in the work with my clients, if they say, I had a fight with my boyfriend, or I have to have this conversation with my boss asking for a raise, or any situation that comes, the first thing that we will try to do, I try to do, is get their permission to unpack a little bit the struggle they're dealing with. So they usually, you know, agree with that. And then from that place, I invite them to perhaps take a deep breath and to really check what hurts right now. What's hurting right now? What's really upsetting about this situation? What's really upsetting about a fight with your boyfriend? What's your mind telling you there? It's easy for all of us to quickly respond to these questions. I'm upset because he said this or he did that. But I think it's helpful to slow down and really understand our pain a little bit more. Our mind is too quickly sometimes to react. So I think I try to unpack more what really hurts when your boyfriend made that comment. What really hurts there? And then I may ask them, what's the sensation or the feeling that is coming with that? Sometimes my clients, they don't have what we call emotional granularity. They cannot tell you the name of the emotion. That's okay. You still can work with the sensations, right? Yeah. I may ask, what's the sensation kicking in your body? Where is that? And then I may ask a little more about that. And one of the things that is important to distinguish is that emotional noise feels big and loud and is always demanding. It's asking us to do something. True wisdom is soft. It's never pushy. It's actually always in the background a little bit. So I invite my clients to check that. Okay, is this what this emotion is asking? Is it demanding that you take action right away? Is it like heavy metal right now? Or is it more like classical music in the background, soft and running? So that's one of the distinctions. That's one of the metaphors I use to distinguish emotional noise or this gut feeling from true emotional awareness. Emotional noise is usually extremely demanding, pushy, and wants you to do something right away. But true awareness is this soft voice that we have that we all have. It just happens that we don't know how to listen to many times because it gets clouded. It's more like classical music that knows what we need to do, that tells us what we have to do without being pushy or demanding. So a lot of the work, this, you know, to facilitate that this differentiation between this gut feeling, emotional noise, and true awareness is really unpacking the struggles and learning to know these two different types of experiences we all have. Yeah. So that's one way that I will teach my clients, using the metaphor of, are you listening to heavy metal right now, or are we listening like classical music in the background?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. That's a really nice way to look at it. And I agree with that. That's kind of how it does feel, right? So, and the other thing you said there, you know, I think before I ask you that question, is when you're getting, you know, an example of getting your clients to like unpack of what's really going on here, or because often we think like anger is an obvious emotion, but actually it's not really the key emotion. A lot of time there's anger's, it's the visible emotion, but really there's some other emotion underneath that's maybe not being expressed, like sadness or disconnection, or, and then the anger's coming up almost as a defense, you know?
Yeah. I think, Stu, you're tapping into something very important here, is that when a person feels a lot, naturally the mind is going to jump quickly into conclusions. It's like the feeling is clouding thinking, right? And of course, if someone asks me in the moment, Patricia, why are you upset? Oh, because this idiot just cut me off on the freeway, right? Mm. That quickly my mind is going to respond. But if we slow down and check what really hurts about that, what really hurts, I think we're going to tap into other experiences that are really hard for us to handle, because someone maybe has broken an expectation of how we want to be treated. Because maybe we're feeling ashamed of ourselves, maybe because we're scared of abandonment, right? Mm. So I think slowing down really taps into that.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, and then the other thing you mentioned when you were talking about your client, you said you might get them to like put their hand on their heart, right? Mm. And for me, that just brought to mind compassion. Right. Compassion for that intensity, as opposed to reacting to it, almost sitting with yourself. That's how I like to look at it. Comforting yourself through that.
Yeah. One of the things that I have found very helpful in my work, it's really doing the best we can, or teaching micro skills to rely on our body as a way of a bridge between all the struggle that we may be dealing internally, overwhelming emotions, uncomfortable thoughts, worries, and what's happening in the present. And I think in the case of super feelers, it is very courageous of them to be walking with this sensitivity to feel too much, too quick, and act too soon. It's like sometimes you have a cut on your arm and someone is putting salt on it, right? You feel it a lot. That's how painful it could be. So I think that is very, very courageous of them. And if they could stop it, I know with my heart, of course they will do it. But sometimes what happens is that because of this promise to feel too much, too quick, and act too soon, they may engage in actions that they regret on, and then they have this loop of self-criticism and self-judgment that perpetuates more the struggle, right? So I think approaching every moment of a struggle with kindness and gentleness, and reminding them that they are doing the best they can in that moment. And it's really, really hard to be walking with this proneness to feel too much, I think it develops a different response and a different relationship with themselves, in the way that they think of themselves and they feel about themselves. So that I think that self-compassion can really help us with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So for those people that are super feelers and also have OCD, does being a super feeler impact OCD symptoms in any way, do you think?
That's a great question. I think we should definitely talk a lot about this. I can tell you what I have encountered in my clinical work, and I would love to hear what you have found also in yours. I do think that we do know that exposure response prevention is certainly the frontline treatment for targeting obsessions, worries, phobias. But I also think in my experience that, again, some people have existence of struggling with emotions, struggling with OCD, and they have this sensitivity. They're also super feelers. In some ways, like they are super thinkers and super feelers, right? Mm. It's like the combo a little bit. And what I do see is that we know that exposure-based treatments, they are going to trigger high degrees of affect, right? That's the game. We know that every time you're going to do exposure, it's not going to be easy peasy or low key. It's hard work, and there is going to be affect. But in some cases, I have seen how my clients, it's not that they feel a big emotion just with the obsession. They have a big emotion when they're feeling sad because someone didn't invite them to a party. They are feeling really scared because they don't know if they're going to get married. Or they are feeling really stressed because they have to take a test. So their experience as human beings, on the one hand, is stressful because of the obsessions, but also because there are other emotions that they feel very overwhelming, that they don't like to feel, that they hate to feel. And they are also struggling acting on those emotions. So I have seen that some people, again, can have all types of OCD or types of anxieties and phobias and being a super feeler. And I do think that when there is that presence of this true struggle, it's important to decide which treatment we do first, or can we do both simultaneously. In my practice, some of my clients, they are learning both. They are learning emotion regulation skills based on acceptance and commitment therapy. We do have a 16-week curriculum that we're teaching clients. And they're also receiving exposure-based treatment, ACT-based exposure as well. In some cases, when we have clients with perhaps a more long-standing pattern of emotion regulation, they are engaging in other types of behaviors that could be harmful to themselves, like some cutting or things like that, right? Then we do request to have first an emotion regulation curriculum first, so they can get a grasp of handling those emotions and engage in more effective coping responses. And then we do the exposure-based treatment. So I don't think there is this absolute rule which one should go first. I think every person is going to have different clinical needs. But I do think there is the coexistence of a person dealing with OCD, worries, phobias, and being a super feeler. And we have to check what we do first. How do you see it?
It's a good question. I'm trying to think. Because I typically work with children and young people, right? So they're definitely super feelers, but they haven't maybe developed to the point of, I'm thinking in terms of BPD at least, of clinical diagnosis. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I have a good answer on that.
Well, I think it's something that perhaps we haven't discussed much about in the field of anxieties, right? Mm. I think that we are much more familiar with exposure-based interventions, and we're familiar with the coexistence of, in the case of OCD, of OCD and substance abuse, OCD and eating struggles, OCD and depression, OCD and ADHD. I think there is much more literature on that. But if we look at our cases, if we look at people who struggle responding with exposure-based treatment, I think in some cases it's because they do have this promise to feel too much, too quick, too soon, and they just don't have micro skills to handle other emotional states besides anxiety or in addition to anxiety. So I think that is, I hope this conversation is really helps the audience really stepping back a little bit and checking, right? Am I a super thinker and a super healer? Do I have this proneness to feel too much, too weak, and act too soon? Because exposure-based treatments won't address that. I think I am a strong believer that people need to learn these micro skills based on emotion regulation to get a grasp of this struggle so they can handle those moments better. So I think we haven't talked too much in the field about that. I think the conversations are starting to happen. So I'm excited to just be part of that with you, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, ERP is an incredible tool in therapy, but it needs integration into other things, you know, to just enhance it even further. The one thing that came to my mind after that I forgot to say is I will do a lot of compassion work with this population. That's in lovely. Particular from compassion-focused therapy, which I think overlaps very well with ACT.
That's beautiful to hear. I think I saw before a study that was conducted using CFT for people that met criteria for BPD. I don't recall the specific. It's something that I saw a couple of years ago. But I think what we are facing once again is that that we need to have different options to help people with this proneness. For being a super feeler, right? We have traditionally dialectical behavior therapy, which is certainly one of the well-established treatments for BPD. Schema therapy also has been researched with this population. And then we definitely have at least 6 or 7 studies using acceptance and commitment therapy for BPD. So I think it is important to remember that it's a diligence duty to check who needs what type of treatment, right? That one size doesn't fit all.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so, you know, you've done a good job of talking about various skills you'd use, but are there any skills you wanted to go into a bit more detail in, or you think would be useful to talk a bit more on?
Yeah. So I think, you know, the other skill that there are many micro skills, right? I'm trying to think what will be helpful. So as I was saying, we do have this 16-week curriculum. Mm. That we're teaching clients that in the 16 weeks, basically, we do have different modules, right? They are modules related to emotions. They are modules related to thoughts. They are modules related to body awareness. There is an interpersonal awareness module in which we talk about attachment and attachment patterns and go-to tactics when people are dealing with conflict. And then there is radical awareness to practice acceptance. And there is the last session that we call like a lab session in which people are bringing the struggles of their day-to-day life and we are plugging the skills that they need to use, right? Also, we're practicing them. So in the thought awareness model, for example, just to give you an example, we teach clients to distinguish affect bias attention or the stories that they tell themselves because of the emotions. One example will be that in our conversation, let's say once again that I get very offended by something you say. I'm really, really, really mad, right? And then, you know, quickly, if I'm feeling really upset with you or I'm feeling hurt, I may think of you in a particular way. And I may think of myself in a particular way, right? I may say, oh, he's this, he's that, he's so annoying. And I may say, I'm so idiot, I'm so stupid. So I may quickly be globalizing who I am based on my emotion, right? Based on the interaction that I have, what I felt. And then I will quickly jump into a story about who you are and a story about who I am. And then I may quickly send you an email and say, Stu, I'm never, ever going to talk to you again, right? So part of the micro skill here is learning those stories that our mind will quickly go into. Our mind will come with the stories about others and about ourselves based on the feeling that we are having. So when you are a super feeler, there is going to be this bias in how you're looking at others and how you're looking at yourself based on your feelings. So it is important to unpack that a little bit and to know this and name those feelings and to know that feeling is going to push you into label people and label yourself. So that would be a micro skill. And the other micro skill is also looking at It's also looking at rules or expectations that we do have about how things are supposed to be. For example, there are many rules that we do have in the world, right? That we should be always on time, that people shouldn't talk to me in this way, that people shouldn't call me this way. And what happens is that sometimes, because we live in an unpredictable world and we don't have control of what people do or say, people are going to do things that disappoint us, that hurt us. And it's going to hurt that one of our rules gets broken, right? We're going to feel disrespected. So it is important also as a micro skill to understand what are those rules or expectations I have about how others should behave that quite likely are going to get broken or we're going to get disappointed based on those rules. So in the thought awareness model, we're also teaching clients to distinguish those rules. And the reason is because a lot of the emotion regulation problems, unfortunately, they hurt a lot our relationships with other people. It's one of those things that people who are prone to be super feelers, they deeply want to be seen, they deeply want to connect, they deeply want to love and be loved. And yet, because sometimes they get clouded by the emotions, they do things that makes it harder for them to connect with other people. So understanding how emotions operate in an interpersonal conflict, how you want to be careful that the rules that you hold or the stories you have about others are affecting your relationships is super important. So that will be another micro skill, right? Another micro skill that we have found extremely helpful, and I think that is very, very unique of this curriculum, is that when you're looking at the interpersonal awareness model, everyone talks about how to be assertive, which basically means how to say yes, how to say no, and how to ask for what you need. And I don't mean to say that that's easy to do. I think it's very challenging, right? Because we don't want to rock the boat sometimes. I think assertiveness is one layer of interpersonal effectiveness. I do think that the other layer in the case of super feelers is to understand what are their go-to fight tactics. When they get hurt, when they're in an argument, what do they do? Do they attack the other person? Do they get upset with themselves? Do they go into nitpicking? Do they go into comparing? Do they go into recalling things from the past? Oh, 22 years ago, you did this, right? So every single human being has a go-to fight tactic. We do have this pattern of handling conflict. So in the interpersonal awareness model, we identify those patterns, their go-to fight tactics. And we also talk about attachment styles. The way that I think about attachment is this interpersonal, ways of connecting with others that we have learned. Do I avoid people? Do I go into clinging mode? You name it, right? So it has been extremely rich to talk about attachment, to talk about go-to fight tactics, and to talk about assertiveness all together. Because I do think that if we only talk about assertiveness, that's super cool. But that's putting a band-aid in a historical relational pattern of connecting with others. So I think within ACT, we're more invested in looking at the context in which our behaviors get developed. And attachment is going to be, of course, part of how we handle conflict. So that's another micro skill that we address in the interpersonal awareness model.
Yeah, thank you for those. And I'm glad you brought up attachment, because reflect that is something I bring up with any super feeder client, if it's relevant, that is, because, you know, obviously we said we don't know why people come super feeders. There's various theories, but I've seen in many of my clients with super feeders, in the ones that I have, there's usually issues with key caregivers, with parents. Maybe they weren't as attuned or as compassionate growing up. And I'm like, well, you know, and I explain almost how the baby's brain develops and the toddler, and if they're not being met and the parents aren't receptive or warm or compassionate, like, what's that doing to your brain? You know, like almost as a way of psychoeducation of no wonder you get overwhelmed or you feel too much. Like it's not your fault, basically.
That's
and then
right.
You're going to attachment.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. One of the things also that I have found is that because of their upbringing, our clients or people sometimes have developed these beliefs about self-compassion, right? Mm-hmm. For example, if I practice self-compassion, it's like becoming selfish, right?
Yeah.
Or learning self-compassion is not being accountable for the things I have done. It's like I'm giving myself a free ticket, right?
Yeah.
Or that's also I have here that that's a big one, right?
Well, as I say, that's a big one for people with OCD as well, of like, well, if I'm compassionate, I'm letting myself off the hook, especially if the thoughts are around harm or having harmed or real event OCD. That comes up a lot around compassion, I found.
Yeah. Again, I think what we see again is that some people can be super thinkers and super feelers, and they may have this very, very harsh way sometimes of relating to being kind with themselves, right?
Mm.
There is this, you know, sometimes I think when we're teaching self-compassion skills, the other block that we hear is that you can only practice self-compassion when you have self-esteem. If you think positively about yourself, then you can practice self-compassion. But to your point, I think that teaching self-compassion skills is key. And I think also with super feelers, we do have these blocks that they show up because historically, perhaps they don't know how to relate to themselves without judging or criticizing themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good point. Really good point. So I guess we kind of touched on it, but like if we think again about super feelers with OCD, how does one manage being a super feeler while doing ERP? Like, because obviously at times ERP can be quite a tough process. And do you find that triggers those intense emotions at times beyond maybe the anxiety around the OCD or?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. I think, let me pause for a moment to answer that. I do think that to me, the idea will be first to check if I'm dealing with a strong feeling related to obsessions. Or if I'm also dealing with big feelings around other stuff, right? So I think that will be to me the first discrimination. And then I will check. I think it's totally fine to start doing some ERP. But what happens is that if we don't have micro skills to handle high levels of affect that happened during the day with other emotions, it makes you more vulnerable sometimes to handle exposures. It makes it hard. And I think that's when we have to decide, right? What do I do first? And can I do both?
Yeah.
I don't think I have an absolute response about it, but I do think that is something that as clinicians and people who receive treatment, we have to think about that. It's hard to answer that question without having too much history of a person, right?
Yeah.
But I think it boils down to that, right? To check if you are prone to be a super feeler and you're dealing with OCD, can you do both? Because exposure by nature is going to involve high affect. But if you're a super feeler, that also means that throughout the day, sometimes you're going to go through your own emotional roller coaster. Can you do both? Now, if a super feeler is dealing with other type of self-harm behaviors, like cutting or other things that happen outside of the OCD, I think sometimes it's much more helpful to have the emotional regulation skills in place, get a hold of those behaviors after X amount of time, and then do ERP. I have seen cases in which people quickly may have jumped into doing exposure and they have think that the cutting was due to the OCD. And of course, that's the case sometimes, but I don't think we should hold these mechanistic views or global views that quickly people are cutting because of OCD. I think it's very important to understand the context in which those behaviors happen. doing chain analysis or breaking down blow by blow what happens, what triggers a behavior, will help us to distinguish where a person is at, right?
Yeah, really good point. Yeah, absolutely. You really have to understand the each individual client and the context. So, okay, so slight change of direction. So you could pick up the phone and call the 8-year-old Patricia. What do you tell her?
Oh my goodness. Oh my God.
So 7, 8, 9. The most challenging question. Yeah.
What will I tell my 7, 8-year-old? I'm trying to think how I was when I was 7, 8 years old. I think today I will look at that 7, 8-year-old version of myself and I will say, keep your eyes open. Keep your eyes open. Just that.
Okay.
It will be keep your eyes open. Yeah.
Is that like a literal open or figurative open?
I think figuratively. You know, I think by nature, my mind I have this curious mind. I have this inquisitive mind, and sometimes I think I get in problems because I'm too curious. And I think, you know, at times I have felt perhaps embarrassed because I ask this or I ask that, right? But it's usually because I have that curious mind, right? I'm just too curious about things. And I think as a kid, I was just a curious kid. Maybe my mom will have said she was too annoying with too many questions. But I think I will tell that to myself. I think it's something that it has been a gift and a curse in my life, both.
Yeah, good point. Well, it's often it's a gift and a curse until we learn to control it. So it's no longer a curse. I don't know what I'm saying, but you know what I mean? Like I often find some of these things that are gifts and curse. We just need to learn how to manage the curse side of it. And then it becomes more of a gift.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. That's beautifully said. I think with age, you know, I think it gets, I get more a hold of my tendency to be curious so I don't get in problems.
Okay, good. And then lastly, is there anything else you wish you could have said or shared today?
I think, sorry if I'm repeating myself, but I just want to encourage to people listening to us today. They really step back a little bit and think what they need and what they're struggling with. I think it's very easy to box ourselves into labels. But I think it's important to step back a little bit and check really what are we struggling with and what do I need. That will be, I think, my message for people. And I would just like to add that to our conversation.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you. So no, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this topic. I'm sure many of my listeners will be able to relate to it or know someone that could relate to it. Thank you for your time and expertise.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a humbling experience to chat with you. And as usual, I have nothing but a lot of respect for all what you're doing with the podcast. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Patricia. Likewise. Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. If you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.